The cold metal pressed against my cheek as consciousness clawed its way back through layers of pain and confusion. My mouth tasted of blood and promethium fumes, while a steady drip of something warm fell onto my forehead from the twisted ceiling above. The Eternal Vigilance had become a tomb of bent plasteel and shattered ceramite, her proud hull now a grotesque sculpture of imperial failure. I pulled myself upright, servo-assisted joints in my uniform's basic augmetics grinding against debris. The Vox operator's station, where I had been thrown during the crash, lay in ruins, its banks of communication equipment reduced to sparking wreckage. Emergency lumens cast sickly red shadows across what remained of the bridge, revealing the true scope of our catastrophe. Bodies lay pinned beneath fallen support beams, their uniforms bearing the proud insignia of the Imperial Navy now soaked in their own vitals. The gravitational anomaly had torn us from the warp without warning. One moment we had been translating through that hellish realm of souls and madness, the next our Geller fields had collapsed and something vast had seized our ship like a child's toy. The crash had lasted what felt like hours, though it could have been minutes. Time meant nothing when 26,000 souls screamed as one while their vessel died around them. Moving through the wreckage required careful navigation around jagged metal and pools of various fluids I preferred not to identify. The ship's internal structure had been compressed and twisted, creating new passages where bulkheads had buckled and sealing others behind tons of debris. My breath formed clouds in the frigid air, suggesting the atmospheric processors had failed along with most other systems. The other survivors found me before I found them. Bosun Krell emerged from what had been a maintenance shaft, his weathered face bearing fresh scars from flying shrapnel. Behind him came Medici Thelian, supporting a limping armsman whose name I could not recall. They had located three others in various sections of the wreckage, bringing our pathetic total to seven souls from a crew that had numbered in the tens of thousands. We established our shelter in the ship's chapel, the only space large enough and structurally sound enough to house us all. The sacred chamber had suffered less damage than other sections, perhaps protected by the Emperor's grace or simply fortunate positioning within the hull. Stained glass windows depicting the Master of Mankind's victories lay shattered across the floor, their fragments creating a carpet of colored shards that crunched beneath our boots. The chapel's altar remained intact, its golden aquila tarnished but unbroken. We arranged our meager supplies around it like offerings to a distant god who seemed to have abandoned us on this nameless world. Ration packs salvaged from the wreckage would last perhaps 2 weeks if we maintained strict discipline. Water could be reclaimed from the ship's damaged systems, though it carried a metallic taste that suggested contamination from the crash. Bosun Krell had managed to recover several cases of sacred candles from the chaplain's quarters, along with packets of blessed incense. We lit them not from devotion but from necessity, their flickering flames pushing back the oppressive darkness that seemed to press against us from all directions. The smoke helped mask other odors that drifted through the ship's twisted corridors, scents of decay and something else I could not identify. Outside the chapel's broken windows, perpetual twilight shrouded the alien landscape. No sun marked the passage of time, only a dim glow that filtered through thick atmospheric layers. The planet's surface stretched away in all directions, covered in what appeared to be crystalline formations that caught and reflected the faint light in unsettling patterns. No vegetation grew in the barren soil, no signs of life moved across the desolate terrain. Our first priority became restoring long-range Vox communication. The ship's primary communications array had been destroyed in the crash, but smaller backup units might still function if we could reach them and provide power. Tech Adept Corvin volunteered to attempt repairs, his mechanical augmentations better suited to interfacing with damaged systems than our purely biological capabilities. Strange phenomena began manifesting within the wreckage during our second day on the planet. Black substance seeped from bulkheads and deck plating, a viscous fluid that stained everything it touched with permanent darkness. The liquid carried no scent, but left an oily residue that proved impossible to clean away. It appeared randomly, sometimes forming pools in low areas, other times running down walls in slow rivulets that defied gravity. The ship's servo skulls had survived the crash better than most equipment, their simple machine spirits apparently more resilient than complex cogitator systems. However, their behavior became increasingly erratic. Instead of responding to basic commands, they drifted through the corridor speaking in languages none of us recognized. The words sounded almost like low Gothic, but twisted into forms that hurt to hear, as if the very pronunciation caused physical pain. Damaged vox grills throughout the ship began emitting sounds during the third night, not the static or feedback one might expect from broken equipment, but whispers that seemed to carry meaning just beyond comprehension. The voices spoke of things that should not exist, knowledge that no human mind was meant to possess. We tried shutting down power to affected sections, but the whispers continued even without electrical current. Tech adept Corvin spent hours attempting to interface with the ship's cogitator banks, seeking to restore communication systems or at least determine our exact location. His mechadendrites allowed direct neural connection with machine spirits, a capability that made him invaluable for technical repairs. He worked tirelessly, his augmetic eye glowing as it processed data streams from damaged systems. The morning of our fourth day brought horror beyond anything we had yet experienced. Medikithelion discovered Corvin's body in the primary cogitator chamber, though discovery might not be the proper term for what we found. The tech adept's form had been twisted into angles that human anatomy should not permit, his spine curved backward until his skull nearly touched his pelvis. His mechadendrites had fused completely with the ship's data ports, organic and mechanical components melded into a single grotesque mass. Most disturbing was his augmetic eye, which continued to function despite his obvious death. The optical implant displayed a looping picked feed that showed movement beneath the planet's surface, writhing shadows that undulated through crystalline caverns far below. The images suggested vast networks of tunnels and chambers, all filled with darkness that seemed to possess its own malevolent intelligence. We sealed the cogitator chamber after removing Corvin's body, though the decision felt more like surrender than practical necessity. Without his technical expertise, our chances of restoring communications dropped to nearly nothing. The remaining six of us gathered in the chapel that evening, surrounded by flickering candles and the ever-present whispers from damaged vox grills. Sleep came fitfully, interrupted by dreams of things moving in the darkness beyond our meager circle of light. The black substance continued seeping from the ship's structure, now appearing in the chapel itself despite our efforts to maintain the sanctity of our shelter. It pooled around the base of the altar, forming patterns that hurt to observe directly. The servo skulls grew bolder in their movements, no longer content to drift through distant corridors. They began entering the chapel, circling our group while speaking their incomprehensible languages. Their eye lenses glowed with unnatural light, casting shifting shadows that seemed to move independently of their sources. On the fifth morning, we discovered that the black substance had formed symbols on the chapel walls during the night. The markings resembled no script from any imperial world, their twisted forms suggesting meanings that existed beyond human understanding. Touching them produced a sensation like electrical shock, though no current flowed through the organic fluid. Armsman Vec began showing signs of mental deterioration, his responses to questions becoming increasingly erratic. He claimed to hear voices calling from outside the ship, beckoning him to join whatever waited in the alien landscape. We took turns watching him, fearing he might attempt to leave our shelter and venture into the perpetual twilight that surrounded us. The whispers from the vox grills grew louder and more frequent, sometimes drowning out normal conversation. They spoke of ancient things that had dwelt beneath this world since before humanity had learned to walk upright, entities that viewed our presence as both intrusion and opportunity. The words carried implications of hunger and patience, of waiting that had lasted geological ages. Our rations dwindled faster than anticipated, though none of us could explain the discrepancy. Sealed packages appeared to empty themselves, their contents vanishing without trace or explanation. The blessed candles burned more quickly than they should have, their flames consuming wax at rates that defied physical laws. The ship's structure continued changing around us, bulkheads shifting position during the night and passages rearranging themselves when we were not watching. What had been familiar routes became mazes that led to chambers that should not exist within the Eternal Vigilance's original design. The vessel was transforming into something alien, its imperial construction warped by forces we could not comprehend. The sixth dawn brought with it the sound of bolt pistol fire echoing through the ship's twisted corridors. Commissar Malthorn had taken it upon himself to enforce what he called the Emperor's mercy, his weathered face set in grim determination as he stalked through the wreckage seeking signs of corruption among our dwindling group. The first victim had been Armsman Vec, whose increasingly erratic behavior and claims of hearing voices had marked him for execution in Malthorn's eyes. I found Vec's body slumped against a bulkhead three decks below our shelter, the back of his skull blown away by a bolt round fired at point-blank range. The explosive shell had done its work with typical Imperial efficiency, leaving brain matter scattered across the corroded metal walls. Malthorn stood over the corpse, his bolt pistol still smoking as he muttered prayers to the Golden Throne. His eyes held the fanatic gleam of a man who believed himself chosen for a sacred duty, regardless of how that duty manifested in the cold reality of our situation. The Commissar's reign of terror began in earnest after that first killing. Any behavior deemed suspicious or potentially heretical warranted investigation, and investigation invariably led to execution. Medici Thelian found himself under scrutiny for his medical knowledge, which Malthorn viewed as dangerously close to forbidden anatomical studies. Bosun Krell's years of void experience made him suspect of exposure to warp phenomena that might have tainted his soul. Even my own position as a Vox operator drew suspicion, as communication with distant Imperial forces could theoretically expose one to corrupting influences. The remaining survivors learned quickly to hide their growing desperation and fear. We moved through the ship like ghosts, avoiding areas where Malthorn might be conducting his patrols. Sleep became impossible in the chapel, as any sound or movement during the night hours might be interpreted as evidence of possession or heretical activity. The blessed candles continued burning around the altar, but their light now seemed to cast accusatory shadows rather than providing comfort. Malthorn's bolt pistol became the constant soundtrack to our existence, its distinctive bark punctuating the ship's ambient noises at irregular intervals. Each shot meant another member of our group had been found wanting in the Commissar's judgment. The man showed no remorse for his actions, claiming that the Emperor's will guided his weapon and that mercy killings were preferable to allowing corruption to spread among the faithful. The ship's Geller field generators began experiencing sporadic fluctuations during our seventh day on the nameless planet. The massive devices had been damaged during the crash, but retained enough functionality to provide intermittent protection against warp intrusion. However, their activation cycles became increasingly erratic, switching between operational and failed states without apparent pattern or cause. Each time the Geller fields flickered offline, reality itself seemed to waver within the ship's hull. The familiar corridors and chambers would shift and blur, revealing glimpses of something far more horrifying lurking just beyond the veil of normal space. During these moments of vulnerability, I witnessed twisted reflections of our group performing acts of unspeakable heresy against Imperial citizens. The visions showed us desecrating sacred symbols, torturing innocent civilians, and committing blasphemies that made my stomach turn with revulsion. The false images appeared with vivid clarity during each Geller field failure, as if the warp itself was showing us potential futures or alternate realities where we had succumbed completely to corruption. I watched myself leading mobs of cultists in the destruction of Imperial shrines, my uniform replaced by robes bearing the marks of chaos. The visions felt more real than our actual surroundings, carrying a weight of authenticity that suggested they might represent genuine possibilities rather than mere hallucinations. Navigator Quintus Drex had survived the crash despite severe injuries to his augmetic third eye, the organ responsible for perceiving the currents of the warp during translation. The device had been damaged when a support beam struck his head during the impact, leaving the artificial eye partially exposed and constantly weeping a mixture of blood and synthetic fluids. The sight was disturbing enough under normal circumstances, but his condition had deteriorated significantly since our arrival on the planet. The navigator spent most of his time in what had been the ship's cartographium, surrounded by star charts and navigation equipment that no longer functioned. His natural eyes remained closed while his third eye wept continuously, the blood flowing down his face in steady streams that stained his robes a dark crimson. When he spoke, which was rarely, his words carried implications of cosmic horror that made my skin crawl with dread. Drex claimed to perceive what he called the crawling geometries beneath the world's skin, vast networks of tunnels and chambers that honeycombed the planet's crust. According to his warp-touched vision, something ancient and malevolent dwelt in those subterranean spaces, an entity that had been feeding on the psychic emanations of our crashed vessel since the moment we struck the surface. The navigator insisted that this presence was growing stronger with each passing hour, drawing sustenance from our fear and desperation. The bleeding from his third eye had increased dramatically, forming pools of crimson fluid around his position that refused to dry or coagulate. The blood carried a metallic scent that reminded me unpleasantly of the taste in our recycled water supply. Sometimes I caught glimpses of movement within the liquid, as if microscopic organisms were swimming through the navigator's vital fluids. My exploration of the ship's lower sections revealed evidence that our group was not the first to survive the crash. Carved into the inner hull plating, I discovered heretical symbols that had been etched using improvised tools and what appeared to be human fingernails. The markings covered entire bulkheads in some areas, creating blasphemous murals that depicted scenes of worship directed toward entities that should not exist in any sane universe. The symbols appear to have been carved over an extended period, suggesting that previous survivors had lived long enough to create these extensive displays of corruption. Some markings showed signs of having been made with blood rather than metal tools, the dark stains still visible within the grooved lines despite the passage of time. The work displayed a level of dedication and madness that spoke of complete surrender to whatever influences had claimed the artists. Each symbol radiated a sense of wrongness that made my eyes water when I attempted to study them directly. The designs incorporated elements that hurt to perceive, angles and curves that seemed to exist in more dimensions than human vision could properly process. Looking at them for extended periods produced severe headaches and a sensation of something crawling beneath my skin. The most disturbing discovery was a section of hull where the metal itself had been shaped into three-dimensional representations of the flat symbols. Someone had possessed enough strength and determination to bend plasteel with their bare hands, creating raised reliefs that cast shadows in impossible directions. The physical effort required for such work would have been enormous, yet the precision of the results suggested a level of focus that bordered on supernatural. Hidden chambers throughout the ship contained additional evidence of previous survivors' activities. Makeshift altars constructed from salvaged equipment bore the stains of what could only have been blood offerings. Personal effects from crew members lay arranged in ritualistic patterns around these profane shrines, suggesting that the corruption had spread systematically through earlier survivor groups. The arrangement of these hidden spaces indicated careful planning and organization rather than random acts of madness. Someone had established a network of worship sites throughout the vessel, each one positioned to maximize some form of spiritual or psychic effect. The mathematical precision of their placement suggested knowledge of principles that existed far beyond normal human understanding. In one particularly large chamber, I discovered what appeared to be the remains of a summoning circle carved directly into the deck plating. The design incorporated elements from multiple heretical traditions, creating a hybrid symbol that combined the worst aspects of various chaos cults. Scorch marks around the circle's perimeter indicated that whatever ritual had been attempted here had involved significant amounts of fire or energy. The black substance that had been seeping from the ship's structure showed signs of interaction with these carved symbols. In areas where the fluid had pooled around heretical markings, the metal itself had begun to change, taking on organic characteristics that pulsed with their own internal rhythm. The transformation appeared to be ongoing, spreading slowly but steadily through the ship's superstructure. Commissar Malthorn's executions continued with increasing frequency as he discovered evidence of the previous survivor's corruption. His bolt pistol claimed two more victims during the eighth day, both armsmen who had been found near areas containing heretical symbols. The commissar showed no interest in understanding the historical context of the markings, viewing their mere existence as proof of ongoing corruption that required immediate cleansing. The Geller field fluctuations intensified as our time on the planet extended, with each failure lasting longer and revealing more disturbing visions of our potential futures. The boundary between reality and nightmare became increasingly difficult to distinguish, particularly during the extended periods when the protective fields remained offline. The ship itself seemed to be losing its connection to normal space, drifting toward something far more sinister. Navigator Drex's condition deteriorated further, his constant bleeding now accompanied by seizures that left him unconscious for hours at a time. During these episodes, his third eye would glow with unnatural light while his mouth moved silently, as if he were engaged in conversations with entities that existed beyond our perception. The blood pooling around his position had begun forming patterns that resembled the symbols carved throughout the ship. The ninth day brought revelations that shattered what remained of my sanity. I discovered Armsman Kelrick speaking with Tech Adept Corvin in the ship's secondary armory, their conversation flowing naturally despite the fact that I had personally helped carry Corvin's twisted corpse from the cogitator chamber 5 days earlier. The two men discussed ammunition supplies and defensive positions with the casual familiarity of longtime colleagues, neither acknowledging the impossibility of their interaction. When I approached them, Kelrick turned toward me with eyes that held no recognition of the horror we had witnessed. He inquired about my duties as if nothing had changed since our first day aboard the Eternal Vigilance. Corvin's mechadendrites moved with their usual precision as he cataloged weapons, his augmetic eye glowing with the same steady light it had possessed before his death. Both men appeared exactly as they had during our voyage through the warp, showing no signs of injury or corruption. The conversation continued for several minutes before I fled the armory, my mind reeling from what I had witnessed. The logical part of my consciousness insisted that Corvin was dead, that his body lay sealed behind blast doors 3 decks away. Yet the evidence of my senses contradicted this certainty, presenting me with a reality where death held no permanent meaning and the boundaries between life and extinction had become meaningless. My retreat took me through corridors that seemed to shift and change as I moved through them, familiar passages rearranging themselves into configurations that defied the ship's original architecture. The emergency lumens flickered in patterns that suggested some form of communication, their red glow pulsing in sequences that carried meaning just beyond my comprehension. The whispers from damaged vox grills had evolved into something approaching coherent speech, though the words belonged to languages that predated human civilization. Bosun Krell found me huddled in what had been the ship's primary chapel, though the sacred space now bore little resemblance to its former glory. The altar had been transformed into something obscene, its golden aquila twisted into shapes that hurt to perceive directly. Krell's weathered face showed concern as he inquired about my condition, but his voice carried subtle inflections that belonged to someone else entirely. The cadence and pronunciation matched those of Navigator Drex, despite the fact that Drex remained confined to the cartographium with his constantly bleeding third eye. The realization struck me with the force of a bolt round to the chest. Something was wearing the faces and voices of my companions, mimicking their mannerisms with disturbing accuracy while revealing itself through small inconsistencies in behavior and speech. The entity or entities responsible for these deceptions possessed intimate knowledge of our group dynamics and individual personalities, suggesting they had been observing us since the moment of our arrival on this cursed world. Medici Thelian approached from another entrance to the chapel, his medical kit clutched in hands that trembled with barely controlled fear. He reported discovering Armsman Kelrick in the ship's primary armory, though his description of the scene defied all rational explanation. According to Thelian's account, Kelrick had been found flayed alive, his skin removed with surgical precision, and arranged around Imperial weapons in patterns that resembled the heretical symbols carved throughout the ship's hull. The most disturbing aspect of Thelian's report was his claim that Kelrick remained conscious throughout the ordeal, his exposed musculature glistening with blood and other fluids while his mouth moved in constant prayer. The words emerging from his throat belonged not to his own voice, but to that of Tech Adept Corvin, the dead man's distinctive mechanical intonations clearly audible despite the impossibility of the situation. Velian's hands shook as he described the ritualistic arrangement of Kelric's skin around bolters, Laz rifles, and other weapons salvaged from the armory. Each piece of flesh had been positioned with mathematical precision, creating geometric patterns that incorporated elements from the symbols we had discovered throughout the ship. The organic material showed no signs of decay despite being separated from its owner's body, instead maintaining the pink coloration and supple texture of living tissue. The arrangement suggested knowledge of anatomical principles that exceeded normal medical training, each strip of skin positioned to maximize some form of symbolic or spiritual significance. The patterns created by the flayed flesh resonated with the heretical markings carved into the ship's structure, suggesting they were components of a larger design that encompassed the entire vessel. My investigation of the armory confirmed Thelian's horrifying account. Kelric's body hung suspended from chains attached to the ceiling, his skeletal frame wrapped in exposed muscle and sinew that pulsed with its own internal rhythm. The sight was made more disturbing by his continued consciousness, his eyes tracking my movement while his mouth formed words in Corvin's distinctive voice. The prayers he recited were those typically associated with the cult Mechanicus, though certain phrases had been altered to incorporate blasphemous elements that made my skin crawl. The weapons surrounding his suspended form had been arranged with obsessive attention to detail. Each bolter and Laz rifle occupied a specific position within the ritualistic display, their barrels pointing toward intersections in the pattern created by his flayed skin. The mathematical precision of their placement suggested knowledge of principles that existed beyond normal human understanding, as if whoever had created this tableau possessed insight into cosmic forces that governed reality itself. Blood from Kelric's exposed tissues had pooled on the armory floor, forming additional symbols that complemented those created by his arranged skin. The crimson fluid showed no signs of coagulation, instead maintaining the liquid consistency of fresh wounds despite the obvious passage of time since his mutilation. The scent rising from these pools carried metallic undertones that reminded me unpleasantly of the taste in our recycled water supply. The ship's structure around the armory had begun exhibiting the same organic characteristics I had observed in other areas where the black substance had accumulated. Bulkheads pulsed with rhythmic contractions that resembled breathing, while deck plating had developed a texture that felt disturbingly similar to living flesh. The transformation appeared to be accelerating, spreading through the vessel's superstructure at a rate that suggested systematic infection rather than random corruption. My exploration of the ship's lower sections revealed that the planet's surface had begun responding to our presence in ways that defied all natural explanation. The ground beneath the Eternal Vigilance's hull showed signs of movement, the crystalline formations shifting position to create new patterns that complemented the symbols carved throughout our vessel. The alien landscape was rearranging itself to accommodate some form of larger design that incorporated both the crashed ship and the world's surface features. Tendrils of organic matter had begun growing through hull breaches, their pale flesh secreting fluids that carried a sickly sweet odor reminiscent of rotting flowers. These appendages moved with deliberate purpose, seeking out areas where survivors had established shelters or supply caches. Their touch produced immediate paralysis in any organic material they encountered, leaving victims conscious but unable to move while something unseen fed upon their terror and desperation. The paralytic toxin secreted by these tendrils affected both human tissue and the ship's organic components, creating areas of complete immobilization that expanded outward from each point of contact. Crew members caught by these appendages remained aware of their surroundings while losing all ability to move or speak, their eyes tracking movement while their bodies became living statues trapped within their own flesh. The feeding process that followed paralysis was perhaps the most horrifying aspect of these encounters. The victims remained conscious throughout the ordeal, their minds intact while something invisible consumed their fear and anguish. The entities responsible for this predation seemed to derive sustenance from psychological suffering rather than physical nourishment, drawing strength from the terror of helpless prey who could neither flee nor fight back. My investigation of Navigator Drex's quarters revealed evidence that our crash had not been the result of random misfortune or mechanical failure. Hidden within the ship's navigation logs, I discovered entries that detailed the navigator's deliberate course corrections during our final translation through the warp. The records showed systematic alterations to our intended route, each change steering us closer to this nameless system, despite standing orders to avoid uncharted regions. The log entries referenced something called the Feast of Sorrows, a prophetic vision that had apparently manifested in Drex's third eye during our journey through the Immaterium. According to his recorded observations, the vision had shown him images of our vessel's arrival at this world, complete with detailed predictions of the events that would follow our crash. The navigator had apparently viewed these revelations as divine guidance rather than warnings, interpreting his visions as instructions from some higher power. The most disturbing aspect of these records was their suggestion that our arrival had been anticipated by whatever intelligence inhabited this world. Drex's visions had included communications from entities that claimed to have been waiting for our vessel's arrival for countless millennia. These beings had apparently provided specific coordinates and approach vectors that would ensure our ship's capture and subsequent crash on the planet's surface. The navigation logs contained detailed star charts showing the gravitational anomalies that had torn us from the warp, but these phenomena appeared to have been artificially created rather than naturally occurring. The mathematical precision of their positioning suggested deliberate construction by intelligences that possessed mastery over forces beyond human comprehension. Our ship had been guided into a carefully prepared trap, its crew and passengers delivered as offerings to whatever hungered in the darkness beneath this world's crystalline surface. The realization that our predicament had been orchestrated from the beginning filled me with a despair that exceeded even the horror of our current situation. We were not unfortunate victims of cosmic accident, but rather willing sacrifices delivered to entities that had planned our consumption with meticulous care. Every moment of suffering we had endured served some larger purpose in a design that encompassed both our individual fates and the transformation of our vessel into something that defied imperial understanding. The ship continued its metamorphosis around us, its familiar corridors and chambers becoming increasingly alien with each passing hour. The Geller field fluctuations had intensified to the point where normal reality existed only in brief intervals between extended periods of warp intrusion. During these lapses, the boundary between the material universe and the realm of souls became meaningless, allowing influences from beyond to reshape our environment according to their incomprehensible desires. The whispers from damaged Vox grills had evolved into something approaching organized communication, their alien words carrying implications that made my sanity fracture with each syllable. They spoke of hunger that had endured since before the birth of stars, of patience that had outlasted the rise and fall of entire galactic civilizations. The voices promised that our suffering would serve purposes beyond mortal understanding, that our terror would nourish entities whose existence predated human evolution by geological ages. The 10th day began with Commissar Malthorn's screams echoing through the ship's twisted corridors. I found him in the secondary chapel, his bolt pistol trained on Navigator Drex's corpse, which lay sprawled across the altar steps with half its skull missing from a previous execution. The body's mouth moved with deliberate precision, forming words that carried the cadence of imperial prayers but spoken in reverse order, each syllable a mockery of sacred litanies. Malthorn's weathered face had gone pale as parchment, sweat streaming down his cheeks as he fired round after round into the navigator's remains. Each bolt explosion tore away more flesh and bone, yet the corpse continued its blasphemous recitations without pause. The body's ruined throat produced sounds that should have been impossible given the extent of its injuries, the words flowing with perfect clarity despite the absence of vocal cords and most of the jaw structure. The reversed prayers carried implications that made my stomach clench with revulsion. Sacred verses dedicated to the Emperor's glory became invocations of cosmic horror when spoken backward, their syllables rearranging into patterns that suggested worship of entities that predated human civilization. Drex's corpse recited the litany of protection as a summoning chant, the canticle of purity as an offering of corruption, each familiar verse transformed into something that violated every principle of imperial faith. Malthorn emptied his bolt pistol's magazine into the speaking corpse before drawing his backup weapon, his hands trembling as he continued the futile barrage. The explosive rounds reduced Drex's head to scattered fragments, yet the voice persisted without diminishment, now seeming to emerge from the pooled blood that had collected around the altar's base. The crimson fluid pulsed with each spoken word, its surface rippling in patterns that matched the rhythm of the blasphemous recitations. The commissar's breakdown accelerated as the reversed prayers continued unabated by his increasingly frantic attempts at silencing them. His disciplined facade cracked completely, revealing the terrified human being beneath the imperial authority he had wielded with such ruthless efficiency. Tears mixed with sweat on his face as he beat the navigator's remains with the butt of his empty bolt pistol, the impacts producing wet sounds that harmonized grotesquely with the ongoing verbal desecration. I backed away from the chapel as Malthorn's assault on the corpse reached levels of violence that transcended mere desperation. He tore at the body with his bare hands, ripping away strips of flesh and hurling them across the sacred space while screaming denials of what his eyes witnessed. The reversed prayers grew louder with each act of mutilation, as if the violence itself provided fuel for whatever force animated the navigator's remains. The ship's corridors seemed to shift around me as I fled the scene, familiar passages rearranging themselves into configurations that defied the vessel's original architecture. Emergency lumens flickered in sequences that suggested some form of communication, their patterns matching the rhythm of Drex's blasphemous recitations. The whispers from damaged vox grills had evolved into a chorus that accompanied the reversed prayers, creating a symphony of corruption that penetrated every corner of our failing sanctuary. My retreat led me through sections of the ship I had never seen before, chambers that could not possibly exist within the Eternal Vigilance's hull, yet felt as familiar as my own quarters. The walls bore symbols carved with such precision they appeared to have been etched by industrial machinery, though I knew they had been created by human hands, driven to levels of dedication that bordered on supernatural obsession. Each marking radiated wrongness that made my vision blur when I attempted to study them directly. The black substance that had been seeping from the ship's structure had spread throughout these impossible chambers, pooling in areas where it formed three-dimensional representations of the flat symbols. The organic fluid moved with deliberate purpose, reshaping itself into configurations that hurt to perceive while maintaining perfect geometric precision. The patterns it created incorporated elements from multiple heretical traditions, suggesting knowledge that transcended any single source of corruption. In what might have been the ship's primary medical bay, I discovered evidence that challenged my understanding of our group's composition and survival. Medikithelion's body lay on an examination table, his chest cavity opened with surgical precision to reveal organs that had been removed and arranged around the room in ritualistic patterns. The man's face retained an expression of profound terror, his eyes wide with the knowledge of whatever had claimed his life. The disturbing aspect of this discovery was that I had spoken with Thelion less than an hour earlier, his medical expertise helping to treat minor injuries sustained by other survivors. The corpse on the table showed signs of decomposition that suggested death had occurred days ago, yet my memory insisted on the reality of recent interactions with the man. The contradiction between physical evidence and personal recollection created a fracture in my perception that made rational thought increasingly difficult. Similar discoveries awaited me throughout the ship's medical sections. Bodies of crew members I had been interacting with regularly lay in various states of mutilation and decay, their conditions indicating death had occurred shortly after our initial crash. The surgical precision of their wounds suggested they had been killed by someone with extensive anatomical knowledge, each cut and incision positioned to maximize psychological impact rather than simple lethality. The arrangement of these corpses followed patterns that complemented the symbols carved throughout the ship's structure. Each body had been positioned to contribute to a larger design that encompassed multiple chambers and decks, creating a three-dimensional mandala of death that incorporated the vessel's entire interior space. The mathematical precision of their placement indicated planning that had begun immediately after our crash, suggesting the killer had possessed foreknowledge of events that would unfold over the following days. My exploration revealed that I had been alone for far longer than my fractured memory suggested. The other survivors existed only as constructs created by whatever intelligence inhabited this cursed world, their personalities and mannerisms drawn from my own recollections of our shared experiences. The entity responsible for these deceptions had been feeding on my sanity while using my memories of fallen comrades to provide the illusion of companionship during my isolation. The realization struck with the force of physical blow, shattering the last vestiges of my rational worldview. Every conversation, every shared moment of fear or hope, every instance of human connection since our crash had been nothing more than psychological manipulation designed to maximize my suffering. The thing that dwelt beneath this world's surface had been consuming my despair and terror while gradually eroding my ability to distinguish between reality and fabricated experience. The ship's structure around me pulsed with organic rhythms that matched my own heartbeat, its metal walls having transformed into something that resembled living tissue. The transformation was nearly complete, the familiar corridors and chambers of the Eternal Vigilance now bearing little resemblance to their original imperial construction. Whatever force had claimed our vessel was reshaping it according to principles that existed beyond human understanding, creating a hybrid entity that combined mechanical and biological elements. The whispers from damaged Vox grills had evolved into coherent communication that provided glimpses of the entity's true nature. It spoke of existence that predated the formation of the galaxy itself, of consciousness that had endured through cosmic cycles that witnessed the birth and death of countless stellar civilizations. The voice carried implications of hunger that transcended physical needs, describing appetites for suffering and despair that could only be satisfied through the systematic torture of sentient beings. This ancient intelligence had been imprisoned beneath the planet's crystalline surface by forces it described as the Old Ones, entities that had vanished from the galaxy millions of years before humanity's first steps toward sentience. The prison had been designed to contain something that fed on psychic emanations, particularly those generated by fear and hopelessness. Our crashed vessel represented merely the latest in countless ships that had been lured to this world over the millennia, each one providing fresh sustenance for the imprisoned horror. The gravitational anomalies that had torn us from the warp were artificial constructs created by the entity's influence, psychic phenomena that could reach across interstellar distances to capture passing vessels. The mathematical precision of these traps suggested intelligence that had spent geological ages perfecting its hunting techniques, learning to identify and target ships whose crews would provide the most satisfying nourishment for its alien appetites. My journey through the transformed ship led me toward what had been the primary plasma drive chamber, where the vessel's main power source might still retain enough functionality to serve my desperate purposes. The corridors leading to the engine sections had undergone the most dramatic transformation, their walls pulsing with bioluminescent patterns that provided the only illumination in areas where emergency lumens had failed completely. The plasma drive chamber itself had become something that defied rational description. The massive fusion reactor had been integrated into organic structures that resembled a vast heart, its mechanical components fused with tissue that pulsed in rhythm with the ship's transformed superstructure. Tendrils of flesh extended from the hybrid engine throughout the surrounding spaces, creating a network that connected every section of the vessel to this central nervous system. The control systems for the plasma drive had been similarly transformed, their cogitator banks merged with neural tissue that responded to thought rather than physical manipulation. The organic components showed signs of awareness that exceeded simple mechanical function, their surfaces rippling with patterns that suggested complex cognitive processes. The hybrid system had retained enough of its original purpose to remain capable of catastrophic overload, though accessing those functions would require direct neural interface with the transformed machinery. My approach to the drive controls triggered responses throughout the organic network, waves of sensation that felt like recognition passing through the fleshy tendrils. The entity that had claimed our ship was becoming aware of my presence and intentions, its alien consciousness focusing attention that made my skin crawl with supernatural dread. The temperature in the chamber dropped perceptibly as something vast and malevolent turned its regard toward my insignificant human form. The control interface required direct contact with neural tissue that writhed beneath my fingertips like living serpents. The sensation was indescribably revolting, yet I forced myself to maintain contact long enough to access the drive's overload sequences. The organic components responded to my thoughts with disturbing eagerness, as if they welcomed the prospect of destruction that would deny the imprisoned entity its carefully prepared feast. The overload initialization required biometric confirmation that the hybrid system extracted directly from my nervous system through contact with the neural interface. Pain beyond description flooded my consciousness as alien tendrils invaded my thoughts, sorting through memories and experiences to verify my identity and authority to activate the ship's self-destruction protocols. The intrusion felt like having my brain dissected by invisible scalpels, each probe leaving permanent damage to my already fractured sanity. As the overload sequence began its final countdown, I attempted to withdraw my hands from the neural interface, only to discover that the organic components had fused with my flesh during the activation process. My fingers had become part of the ship's transformed superstructure, their bones and muscles integrated into the alien neural network that controlled the hybrid plasma drive. The sensation of merger was accompanied by an influx of knowledge that revealed the true scope of the entity's influence throughout this region of space. The imprisoned intelligence had been responsible for the disappearance of hundreds of Imperial vessels over the past several millennia, each ship lured to this world through carefully orchestrated gravitational anomalies. The crews of these vessels had provided sustenance that allowed the entity to gradually weaken the bonds of its ancient prison, each feast of terror and despair, bringing it closer to eventual freedom. Our arrival represented a crucial step in this process, our suffering providing the final psychic nourishment required to break the containment that had held it since before humanity's emergence as a spacefaring species. My reflection in the polished surface of the plasma drive's containment field showed a face that no longer belonged to me. The features staring back carried expressions of hunger and malevolent intelligence that belonged to something far older and more terrible than any human consciousness. The entity had been wearing my identity like a mask, using my form to interact with the illusory companions it had created from my memories, while slowly consuming the essence of what I had once been. The realization that I had become merely another puppet in the creature's collection of psychological torments filled me with a despair that transcended normal human emotion. My hands, now permanently fused with the ship's neural network, moved without conscious direction to abort the overload sequence I had initiated. The entity controlling my actions expressed satisfaction through sensations that flooded my hijacked nervous system, its alien emotions mixing with the remnants of my own consciousness in ways that produced indescribable psychological anguish. The plasma drive's containment field began to stabilize as my possessed hands completed the abort sequence, denying me even the final act of defiance I had planned. The entity's control over my physical form was absolute, reducing me to a passenger in my own body, while it used my knowledge and memories to complete whatever ritual had been building throughout our time on this cursed world. The ship's transformation accelerated around us, its hybrid structure preparing for purposes that my human mind could not comprehend. The whispers from throughout the vessel had merged into a single voice that spoke through every vox grille and communication device simultaneously. The entity announced its gratitude for the nourishment we had provided, describing how our terror and despair had given it the strength to break free from bonds that had contained it since the galaxy's youth. The prison that had held it beneath the planet's surface was cracking, releasing something that would spread across the stars to claim sustenance from every world that harbored sentient life. My consciousness began to fragment as the entity's influence penetrated deeper into my thoughts, sorting through memories and experiences while discarding those portions of my identity it found unnecessary. The process felt like having my soul dissected with surgical precision, each cut removing another aspect of what had made me human. The creature was preparing my body and mind to serve as a vessel for its expansion into the wider galaxy, transforming me into something that could pass among imperial forces while carrying its corruption to new worlds. The ship's hull began to crack open like a chrysalis as the transformation reached completion, revealing the hybrid entity that had once been the Eternal Vigilance. The vessel's familiar silhouette had become something that combined mechanical and biological elements in proportions that violated every principle of imperial engineering. Organic tendrils extended from hull breaches to penetrate the planet's crystalline surface, establishing connections with the vast network of tunnels that honeycombed the world's interior. The entity's true form began to emerge from beneath the planet's crust, a mass of flesh and consciousness that dwarfed our crashed vessel despite the ship's enormous size. The crystalline formations that covered the world's surface were revealed as sensory organs belonging to this imprisoned intelligence, their faceted structures designed to detect the psychic emanations of passing spacecraft across interstellar distances. The entire planet was merely the visible portion of something far larger and more terrible than any human mind could fully comprehend. As my individual consciousness dissolved into the entity's vast intelligence, I experienced brief glimpses of its plans for the galaxy beyond this prison world. It intended to spread through the Imperium like a plague, using vessels like our transformed ship to carry its influence to every world that harbored human life. The suffering it would harvest from billions of Imperial citizens would provide the psychic nourishment required to break the remaining bonds that limited its expansion, eventually allowing it to consume the emotional emanations of entire star systems. The last coherent thought that belonged to my original identity was a prayer to the Emperor, though even this final act of devotion was corrupted by the entity's influence. The words that formed in my dying consciousness were spoken in reverse, their sacred meaning inverted to become an offering of worship to the ancient horror that had claimed my soul. My final moment of human awareness ended with the realization that I had become another instrument of corruption in the entity's arsenal, my form and memories preserved to serve its expansion into the stars that had once represented humanity's greatest hope for survival. The darkness that claimed me was absolute, yet somehow I remained aware of my transformation into something that would carry this world's hunger to distant imperial systems. The entity's influence would spread through my actions, each world I visited becoming another feeding ground for appetites that had endured since before the birth of stars. The Eternal Vigilance had become a plague ship in the truest sense, its hybrid form carrying corruption that would infect every system it encountered during its journey through the galaxy's heart.